Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome in Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty in with you for another Sports Power Hour, Corey. And plenty to talk about this week, as we've had every single week. This time, we're finally talking football after months of no football and lots of football on the screen over the weekend with the NFL Draft in Nashville, Tennessee. And lots of SEC players chosen. We're going to talk a lot about the draft this hour, coming up in the next segment. Hopefully we'll keep him for a couple segments, but Chase Goodbread from NFL.com. He is he covers the draft, covers a lot of the college athletes, a lot of SEC athletes he covers as they get ready for the NFL draft. So we'll talk with him. I think he was up in Nashville over the weekend from Thursday till Saturday. Also, we're in the midst of the second round of the NBA and NHL playoffs. Right now, Toronto and Philly playing their second game of their best of seven series. We'll get into the NBA playoffs a little bit later. And just a bunch to get to. We'll talk about which teams won the draft, which teams had some suspicious drafts, and also some news with Doug Baldwin, Pensacola guy, might be done. His NFL career might be over, if you hear. That's according to Adam Schefter. But, Corey, let's start off with the NFL draft and players from right here in the state of Alabama. Were you able to check it out at all this weekend?
I was able to watch it, and I tell you what, Dalton, Nashville showed up and showed out.
They did.
I think there were over 500,000 people in the streets of Nashville over the three-day draft period, and it's just a wonderful event, taking it out of New York City and now allowing it to bounce around. We'll see what's on tap for the 2020 draft that's scheduled to be in Vegas. But Nashville, just great weather, a little bit of rain on the first night of Thursday, but it was beautiful Friday and Saturday, which allowed the fans to interact with everyone. And that's the biggest thing, to be able to hear your name called with the roaring fans and just the anticipation of waiting to hear your name called. That's, to me, what made the NFL draft so awesome.
Yeah, Nashville has made a habit of putting on some big shows when the nation's eyes are on them. And I'm a guy born in Nashville, first 10 years of my life right outside of Nashville before we moved down here to Alabama, and still make it up there for Titans games and Predators games on occasion. Now, the Titans games have completely – they used to be like the loudest crowd in the NFL, used to be completely packed with all Titans fans, and now they're lucky to fill the stadium with 70% Titans fans. There's so many fans from other teams that come by, but that's part of the reason why Nashville is such a big-time city. You got people that want to visit Nashville. They want to spend their vacation coming to Nashville, and you saw it over the weekend with the fans from all different kinds of teams, Cowboys fans, Steelers fans, Niners fans. They were all there for the NFL draft, and Nashville likes to put on a party. So they did end up setting some records, not only there at the draft with the number of people that showed up on Broadway, but they're saying 6.1 million viewers over the course of the 3 days of the draft. That's an average viewership at any minute of any point in the draft, they said. So I guess 6.1 million average from round one through round seven. The first round topped 11 million viewers, and I think that is a record-setting draft for the NFL. And like you said, NFL said there were over 600,000 fans in attendance. Tough to tell, though. Kind of like counting people at Mardi Gras.
Right.
They have to count by the block, and they have this specific way of counting them. But regardless of how you look at it, pretty successful draft for Nashville, and Vegas is going to try to top them next year, just like they did with the hockey team.
Yeah, I think they'll be able to, just the excitement and the gambling that goes on. But again, Music City did a wonderful job. A lot of surprises, and I look forward to talking to Chase about the surprises, those whose stocks really dropped, those who kind of came by surprise, because there are a lot of surprises there. I know you and I were trying to pick out a week ago when we talked to Deshaun Davis. He was just happy to hear his name called and be drafted, because there's nothing like the anticipation of waiting, and you don't hear your name called.
Mm-hmm.
That's a horrible feeling. So just to have an opportunity to hear your name called, whether it's by the commissioner or whether it's by former players, just the opportunity to be drafted, that's awesome for Deshaun.
Yeah, well, that was a great moment, seeing Deshaun with his family when he found out he was picked. And we'll get into detail about some of these guys later, but I do want to run down the Alabama guys, the Auburn guys, even a couple of the South Alabama guys who went undrafted. But the SEC, again, 13 years in a row now, Corey, that the SEC has sent more players than any other conference to the pros through those seven rounds of the draft. 13 years in a row. This year they had 64 players from the Southeastern Conference drafted. The next best was the Big Ten with 40 players. So SEC had 24 more players drafted than the next conference, the Big Ten. Also, Alabama, I think the second year in a row that Alabama had the most players drafted of any college, and the third year in a row they've gotten over 10 players in the NFL draft, but 12 came from the Tide last year, 10 more this year. And it all started with the third overall pick. I think this guy might be my favorite guy in the draft, the more I learned about him over the course of this last year. Quinnen Williams went to the New York Jets, third overall. I thought there was a chance he might go second, or even first if Arizona had a change of heart. I think he might be the best complete football player in this draft for as well as he plays his position. But Quinnen Williams, in all kinds of personality, he reminds me so much of Charles Barkley. Seems just like a funny dude that just loves playing ball. His brethren, Jonah Williams, from the other side of the line, he went 11th overall to the Cincinnati Bengals. He'll have a chance to start pretty much immediately. So will Josh Jacobs, who went 24th to the Oakland Raiders. Now that Marshawn Lynch has announced his retirement, should be plenty of room in that backfield for Josh Jacobs. Those were the three guys that went in the first round on Thursday. And then in rounds two and three on Friday, you had Irv Smith Jr. going to the Minnesota Vikings with the 18th pick of the second round. And the other running back that was in the draft, Damian Harris, goes to New England in the third round. It'll be interesting, Corey, watching him split carries with Sony Michel, because I'm guessing that'll be the plan going into next year.
Yeah, I mean, Sony was injured this year. So you look at Damian being versatile and trying to stay healthy, but coming from that pedigree, that background, I mean, Belichick and Saban, he knows if you come from that Bama mentality and are Bama built, that you'll be able to help his team.
And both are about the RBBC, that running back by committee. That's how both of those teams get their yards in the backfield usually. I mean, you've had your bread carriers like Mark Ingram and Derrick Henry in the past, but for the most part, they split up their carries pretty evenly. The next day on Saturday, the final four rounds, you had more players go. Christian Miller went to the Carolina Panthers, which worked out because if you looked at his Twitter when he was a kid, I don't know if he was a Panthers fan, but he wore a Carolina jersey. It looked like a yearbook photo.
Yeah, that's at pretty one point. Awesome.
So that's cool. He's going to play on the other side of Cam Newton in practice. Then Deontay Thompson, the very first pick of the fifth round, he's heading to Arizona. That should be a good fit. Ross Pierce-Baker heading to the Washington Crimson Tide, or the Washington Redskins.
Yeah.
They should be the Washington Crimson Tide with how many Alabama players they've drafted over the last 5 years. He went in the fifth round. And then this was surprising to me. We'll have to ask Chase about this in the next segment. But Mack Wilson, inside linebacker for Alabama, dropped all the way down to the fifth round. He did end up at a really good defense, a really young defense with the Cleveland Browns, but I think a lot of people thought Mack Wilson would go a little bit earlier than he actually did.
I know I did, Dalton. I mean, I hated it for the young man to sit and wait and wait and wait, and then that just justifies what Coach Saban said about staying in school. There's a difference between fifth-round money and second-round money, and Mack Wilson lost a lot of money and will have an opportunity on the second go-round to earn it.
Isaiah Bugs, he was the last draft pick for Alabama. He went to the Pittsburgh Steelers in the sixth round. Then you had three players that went undrafted, and some of this was exactly what Nick Saban was talking about when he was talking about players leaving earlier. Savion Smith went undrafted. He signed with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Then you had Jamie Mosley go undrafted, but he's joining CJ Mosley up there with the New York Jets. Lester Cotton went undrafted. He went and signed with the Oakland Raiders, so he'll be blocking for Josh Jacobs at times, I'm sure. And then tight end Hale Hinches, who I'm not sure really anyone expected him to go in the top seven, just the mold of tight end that he is, but he signed with Indianapolis, so he should have a chance to show out there. And then we'll go through the Auburn players really quickly. They had plenty of players drafted. Most of them came in the later rounds, but Jamel Dean was the first Auburn player to go. He went to Tampa Bay in the third round with the 94th overall pick, and with as horrible as that secondary was last year, Jamel Dean is going to get quite the opportunity to play lots of football in Tampa Bay. Jarrett Stidham went in the fourth round to the New England Patriots. How about that? He's going to be backing up Tom Brady. I think he'll have to fight to back up Tom Brady. He's going to be in a bit of a training camp battle there. But what an opportunity to learn from the greatest.
That's the big time for him, and it's a system that I think fits him. That's why the Patriots went ahead and drafted him in that situation. He didn't really flourish at Auburn. Put up big numbers at Baylor, but I expect when he goes back to the Patriots, things are going to go well for him.
Darius Slayton, he was picked in the fifth round by the New York Giants. We'll see with Odell Beckham out the way. We'll see how many passes he catches from Eli or how many he might catch from Daniel Jones. More on that in a little bit in that controversial pick. Deshaun Davis, you mentioned it. He's heading to the Cincinnati Bengals. They picked him in the sixth round. Chandler Cox, the fullback, going to the Miami Dolphins. And defensive tackle Dontavius Russell picked by Jacksonville in the sixth round. Then he had three undrafted Auburn Tigers. Ryan Davis, he's going to join Jarrett Stidham there in New England. Darrell Williams, signed by New Orleans. He's a linebacker. And then defensive tackle Andrew Williams, signed by Jacksonville. And then two South Alabama players did not hear their name called but were signed after the draft. And you got Jamarius Way, the wide receiver, heading to the Green Bay Packers, and Bull Barge, the linebacker, heading to Minnesota. All right, coming back on the other side, we'll talk with Chase Goodbread. But first, I want to tell you about American Softball Association. You know what I'm talking about. The top women's professional softball league, and it's right here in our very own backyard. And right now, the ASBA looking for host families for their upcoming six-week-long season begins here coming up in mid-June. And the reason I think it'd be cool to be a host family, maybe when I'm a little older and my daughter's a little bit older, hopefully she's playing softball, but this is a chance to have a professional softball player, somebody who excelled in college, come live with you for 6 weeks, basically teach and mentor your softball player. You don't even have to feed, transport, or finance the players. You just got to give them a place to live and a bureau or a closet for them to keep their stuff. Or if you don't have a kid and you just want to show these pro athletes some Southern hospitality, you can find out more about becoming a host family at asbasoftball.com. All right, coming up on the other side of this break, Chase Goodbread from NFL.com going to break down the draft for us from over the weekend. And we'll see if we can get a look ahead at the 2020 NFL draft prospects coming out of Alabama and Auburn. This is Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty in with you on this Monday night.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty in with you on this post-NFL draft Monday night. And pleasure to be joined once again by Chase Goodbread, NFL draft. He covers it for NFL.com and also hosts Crimson Cover TV, covering Alabama Crimson Tide football. And he's been all over some of the best storylines in the NFL draft this year. Chase, thank you so much for joining us again.
Glad to do it, fellas.
So, were you up there in Nashville for the draft over the weekend?
I was up there for the draft, and actually a couple days ahead of time. I got up there on Monday while some things were kind of still under construction, and kind of got to see the finish of the build a little bit. And of course, by Wednesday, it was pretty much done for the first round on Thursday. But it was a crazy scene. I mean, if you know what's become of that entertainment district on Broadway in Nashville, you know how crazy it can get. And the NFL draft being there, you mix in a couple hundred thousand people, and it's insane.
Yeah, they were saying, I guess today NFL PR was putting out the numbers, over 600,000 people they think showed up downtown. And you could really tell on TV and with some of the photos taken, it looked like a madhouse on Broadway.
You almost had to avoid it just because if you go into it, you can't move. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's just
a tight mass of humanity. And after a couple of days of it, I was a little leery of crossing Broadway. Mm-hmm. You almost rather have to go around it if you can. You could do it quicker.
I can imagine. Well, earlier in the first segment of our show, Corey and I were talking about each of the players drafted from Alabama and Auburn. And let's just start by talking about the draft as a whole. SEC had the most players of any conference drafted, I think, for the 13th year in a row. And, of course, at the top of the SEC, you had Bama for the second year in a row with the most players drafted. That stat alone would point towards the SEC being the best conference in the nation, right? Or at least the most athletic.
The most talented. I mean, it's certainly hard to argue with that. They ended up with 64 draft picks in this particular draft, which even for the SEC is high, because if you go back and look at the other 12 years in a row that they've led all conferences, the number's more typically in the 50s. But they end up with 64 this year. Alabama ended up with 10, which was the most of any school, and it was also the third year in a row that Alabama has had 10 or more, which is unprecedented in the common draft era. So definitely a banner day for the league.
Quinnen Williams goes number 3 to the Jets, and many analysts thought he was the best player in the entire NFL draft. I know Quinnen is going to be a great fit for the Jets, but talk to us a little bit about his story and the excitement surrounding his story, because that's a brother combination to where people didn't know that, you know, he has a great story within his family.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Quinnen Williams, he's actually got 3 siblings, and his older brother Quincy was a linebacker at Murray State, and they lost their mother to cancer at a young age. Pretty tragic story. We wrote a long form about it on NFL.com/backtocampus. And I want to say, if I remember, Quinnen was in the neighborhood of, you know, just 10, 12 years old when this happened. I think his mother Marquisha passed away in her late 30s. And so, obviously, a really traumatic thing. At the time, Quincy was a ninth grader, and Quinnen was still in the seventh grade. And Quinnen was able to kind of hold things together academically. Quincy, being in the ninth grade, you know, if you follow recruiting at all, and you listen to these college coaches — I'm getting off on a tangent here — but these college coaches will all tell you, and the guidance counselors will tell you too, if you're trying to get to play college football, your ninth grade year academically is just as important as any other year. And so if you get in there in the ninth grade and you tank it, it can ruin your chances. And so Quincy Williams kind of tanked it his ninth grade year, you know, going through a lot of home stress, obviously, almost didn't qualify at all. Murray State ends up taking him. He barely made his grades, and he ends up getting drafted in the third round by the Jacksonville Jaguars, which was a shock to a lot of people. I could tell you, I talked to some scouts early in the draft process who hadn't even heard of him as of, say, December. So for him to go mid-draft like that, the Jaguars were definitely — you don't want to say they're out on a limb. Maybe they're out in front. Who knows? It depends on how well he plays. But that pick definitely caught some people by surprise. And, of course, like you said, Quinnen goes number 3 to the Jets, maybe the best player in the whole draft. So two brothers going into the league as draft picks is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll admit I had no idea that Quinnen had a brother that was eligible for the draft. No idea until I saw that call was made. But Quinnen, as much as I've seen about him over the last year, he seems like a guy that you can really get behind and root for. Seems like a really good guy from all that I've seen. You mentioned that that was a surprise his brother was picked. I think probably the biggest surprise of the first round had to have been Giants general manager Dave Gettleman going with Daniel Jones, 6th overall. Now, we had heard Kyler Murray, we'd heard Dwayne Haskins, even Drew Locke, I thought after the Senior Bowl would be a little bit higher up than he was. But Daniel Jones, he wasn't a first-round name being tossed around until Gettleman said something like the week going into the draft. Were you surprised by that pick?
I wasn't surprised Jones went in the first round at all, because every year you're going to see teams – I mean, those guys are going to get picked. The first 3 or 4 quarterbacks, they're going to go in the first round, even if it's a weak quarterback year. And this was supposedly a weak year for quarterbacks, and yet still 3 of them go in the first round. Daniel Jones, a guy — I think Giants fans more than anything else feel like Daniel Jones could have been there at 17.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you get a Josh Allen at 6 or some kind of defensive star, and then go back and get Daniel Jones at 17. So could the Giants have waited, maybe traded down or something, and still gotten Daniel Jones? Yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance of that. But at the end of the day, it's all about how Jones – but no one's going to care how high Daniel Jones gets drafted if he wins football games for the Giants.
Right, yeah, it's all about the quarterback, and it's about how well he plays over the next few years. A guy I thought was going to go higher and that you've been covering for a while now, Drew Locke, I thought he put a good week together at the Senior Bowl. He looked good playing quarterback for Missouri, and he did end up going to Denver just 32 picks later than people thought he was going to earlier in the month. What did Drew Locke have to say about dropping so far down the draft boards after the fact?
He was definitely antsy about it. You could tell listening to his press conference after the pick, because of course he was up there in Nashville and was one of the guys in the green room, one of the last guys out of the green room, obviously. And it's a tough wait for those guys. It's a real grind when you see guys disappearing from the green room to put the hat on and go hug Roger Goodell, and all of a sudden the rooms get emptying out and you're still in there. It's tough. But Denver gets him in the second round. It's a good spot for him for sure. Definitely not where he wanted to get picked, but I think you could tell he was happy with the fit and his landing spot for sure in Denver. With John Elway in place, he was happy about that.
You talk about people's stock who have dropped. You look at Elijah Holyfield deciding to come out of Georgia a little bit early, and now he's going to become a free agent. And you also looked at some guys who went ahead and signed. I thought Hunter Renfrow would have gone a little bit earlier in the draft, the dynamic old man wide receiver from Clemson that Alabama fans can't stand. But who were some other shocks in the draft that you kind of thought his name would be called sometime during those seven rounds?
How about David Sills from West Virginia? I mean, here's a guy that averaged a touchdown catch per game at West Virginia for his career over two seasons. So, you know, he was phenomenal catching balls from Will Greer. Not the fastest guy in the world, but he's got a lot of size. He's got length. He's got the range. And really good hands for somebody that was a quarterback until, you know, age 18. You know, he was a quarterback until probably age 20 or so. So a lot of upside with him. I would have thought he would have gone no later than round 4 or 5. He ends up going undrafted altogether. I thought Mitch Hyatt, the left tackle from Clemson, who's one of the best tackles in the ACC, thought for sure he was going to get picked. That did not happen. So there are always some shockers like that in the NFL draft, guys you think will go that don't, and guys like Quincy Williams who no one's even thinking about get picked. So it's wild.
Of the of all the Bama players that were drafted, are there any situations that you think might line up well for some success down the road, other than those top three guys that went in the first round and are going to have all the opportunities in the world? But anybody below those first round guys you think just are walking into a perfect situation?
Damian Harris going to New England seems like a marriage made in heaven. He's real good with the pass protection, and you know that's something that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are going to value very highly. So he'll go in there and play. They rotate backs in New England even more than most teams, and they all rotate them, but New England really rotates them. So it'll be a role. He's not going to get fed 20 times a game or anything. But I do think Damian Harris is going to play a lot of football pretty quickly for the Patriots. And you know, beyond that, I think Isaiah Bugs going to the Steelers in the sixth round, that's a good fit for him. I think he's a Steelers kind of player, not the kind of guy that would wow people at the combine with his measurables, but just a good tape guy. You know, he had an outstanding final season for Alabama. Not only stopping the run, but he got after the quarterback a little bit too. I thought he was going to go a little sooner than the sixth round based on what he showed in his last year at Alabama as a pass rusher. And I don't think he's going to be a great pass rusher in the NFL, but I do think he's the kind of guy, he's a lunch pail guy. He's a Steelers kind of player.
Well, I tell you what, Chase, you do a wonderful job in covering the NFL and the Alabama Crimson Tide. And I know when you come down here to the Senior Bowl, we had Jim Nagy on the show last week. 10 first rounders for the Senior Bowl, and that's huge. 93 total players drafted in rounds 1 through 7. And I know your time down here in Mobile gives you a hands-on opportunity to see all the players from across the country play in the most elite game that there is.
Yeah, no doubt. Jim Nagy did a great job picking those guys. He doesn't do it by himself. You know, he's got a staff of scouts, of course, that he's brought in for his first year as the executive director of the Senior Bowl. And those are guys that have got NFL scouting experience. And so no surprise, they knew what they were doing when they hit the road, and they picked some pretty phenomenal players. You look at, and it's not just the first rounders. I mean, they went out and found a guy like Andy Isabella, for instance, from UMass. He ends up getting picked in the by the Arizona Cardinals in the second round. He looked really good at the Senior Bowl as well. And with Kyler Murray in Arizona now, and Andy Isabella running around, that's a lot. It's going to be a lot of speed out there. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, Kingsbury certainly has a lot to work with, and you've written great articles on all these guys. I mean, we could talk about them all day. Montez Sweat, you covered. Jalen Hurd, who just has a fascinating story. If people want to check out your writing and the Crimson Cover TV, how can they check that out, Chase?
NFL, the Back to Campus series is a series of long-form features that we write on draft prospects throughout the year. We start them in the fall, and we write them all the way through the spring. And the place to find those online is NFL.com/backtocampus, and the two is a numeral two. So it's a pretty good resource. I know sometimes I get some feedback from NFL scouts even on those stories because we travel for those stories. We talk to 10, 15 people usually for every one of them and dig deep and try to tell the human side of the story on some of these guys because most people only know the football side.
Well, we certainly appreciate it and appreciate the great writing you have out there. Thank you so much for joining us tonight and hope to talk again soon.
Yeah, enjoyed it, fellas.
All right.
Thank you, Chase.
Chase Goodbread writes for NFL.com about these draft prospects, and sounds like he had a great weekend up there in Nashville along with 599,999 other people, and certainly a treat to get to talk to him. You can follow him on Twitter at Chase Goodbread. All kinds of great information on his Twitter page. All right, this is Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Coming back, Corey and I will discuss a little bit more about the draft before we get into some NBA playoffs talk. Also, NASCAR at Talladega. That was an entertaining race, and some NFL news with Doug Baldwin's career maybe coming to an end. Tyreek Hill, will he play again? Ever? Will he ever play again after the new news that came out on him? And also Sebastian Janikowski retires on a weekend where I think two kickers were drafted and maybe three punters. I've never seen anything like it, Corey. We'll talk about it when we get back. Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
Sports talk to start your week. You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty in with you on this Monday night. You can find me on Twitter at Dalton Orwig. That's DaltonOrwig. Just past the 600 follower threshold. Pretty proud of myself. I think only everybody I follow has more than 600 followers. But still, proud nonetheless. Corey, who has many more followers than at Dalton Orwig, where can they find you?
At C.A. LeBounty. C.A. LeBounty on Twitter is where you can find me.
And we are both on Prep Sports Report on Saturday mornings, although Corey spends a whole lot more time on the mic than I do because he is a high school specialist. But we load that to our online podcast feed every weekend, and it's the same place that you can find the Sports Night podcast after our show ends. Just go to fmtalk1065.com and click on the Sports and Outdoors tab, and you'll find Prep Sports Report, you'll find Sports Night, also Southern Fairways Golf Radio with Randy Bergen and Danny Spivey that comes on Sunday mornings. And, you know, they're entering the stretch right now of great golf with the PGA Championship coming up, the Masters in the rearview mirror, all kinds of great stuff to listen to with Randy Bergen and Danny Spivey on Sunday mornings. But check all those podcasts out, fmtalk1065.com on the Sports and Outdoors tab. All right, so it's been a NFL draft Monday night. We've talked a lot about the Bama players, talked a lot about the Auburn players that have been drafted, and thank you to Chase Goodbread from NFL.com for coming on with us in the last segment. And really, some of these guys that he's followed and written profiles on ended up, we didn't know it when we talked to him in February, but these guys ended up being the story of the draft. I mean, you talk about Jalen Hurd, who started off playing for the Tennessee Vols at running back. He was the bell cow, playing in front of even Alvin Kamara, who's sure now a top five NFL running back. And Jalen Hurd had a falling out with then head coach Butch Jones. He looked at where the money is and how long careers last at running back in the NFL and made the conscious decision, even though it was very unpopular, especially in Knoxville, Jalen Hurd made the conscious decision to become a wide receiver, transfer to a different school. I'm sure a big part of that was Butch Jones and their disagreements that they had. But no one really gave Jalen Hurd a shot, I don't think. He played one season at Baylor on a not very good team, but ended up putting, I think, over 800 yards up and I think 9 touchdowns, 6'5", and didn't look completely out of place as a receiver. He ended up going in the second round, which I don't think anyone would have predicted, to San Francisco. So he's got a good quarterback throwing the ball to him also if Garoppolo can stay healthy. But that's one of the guys that Goodbread wrote about, and Jalen Hurd, just a fascinating story.
Did he go 67 to the 49ers?
Yeah, he did go to the 49ers. I think it was the 67th pick, so that would have been one of those extra picks that they give teams.
What's interesting is I think Kamara went 67.
That's exactly right.
And now he goes 67. So it's something about that magic number there, 67, getting it done.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, I'm rooting for Jalen Hurd. He seems like a good guy. I had my druthers about supporting him when he left Tennessee, but after all that's come out from how the program was operated under Butch Jones, it seems like he found his lane and made something good out of it. Also, Montez Sweat is a guy that Chase wrote about. You can find some more online about him, but that's an interesting story also because he kind of came up this senior year and was a dominant edge rusher at Texas A&M, and then Senior Bowl week, Montez Sweat really showed out. He was all over the practice field. He looked great during the game itself, and then when there was testing, I guess, before the combine or during the combine, they believed that Sweat had a heart condition, and that hurt his draft stock pretty badly. But then it came out, I guess, the week leading into the draft, that maybe the heart condition thing was a little overblown.
Right.
It's tough to tell sometimes with the way these agents and some teams put out information hoping they can get a guy to drop to them. But Montez Sweat, who for a while there was looking like a early first-round guy, he ended up going to the Washington Redskins late in the first round. And, Corey, Washington, that's a team that I think really put together a good draft, starting with Dwayne Haskins. Not just the fact that they got the quarterback that they wanted, but the fact that they had the stones to sit back and wait and not trade up earlier in the draft. They waited until their pick came up at number 15 and got the quarterback that they wanted and who a lot of people think might be the best quarterback in the entire draft.
And I think that he's going to play with a chip on his shoulder. As he said, the NFL done messed up now. When the Giants decided to go against and not pick him and decided to pick Daniel Jones from Duke instead, Dwayne Haskins now also will possibly be throwing to his a collegiate teammate, Terry McLaurin, the wide receiver from Ohio State.
Yeah.
So that's huge for him to have somebody familiar that he knows and he can trust. But, I mean, a lot of analysts did pick him to be the best quarterback
right.
in the draft. I mean, he had everything, the size, the stature, the arm strength that you really required, and he had the pedigree of playing at Ohio State as well.
Yeah, and not only playing at Ohio State, but setting Big Ten records along the way. I love this Washington draft, which isn't something you get used to saying year in and year out with kind of the dysfunction they seem to have in ownership. But with Haskins going 15, Montez Sweat late in that round, you mentioned McLaurin, who also had a great week at the Senior Bowl. Then Bryce Love, who was just a Heisman candidate 2 years ago. He ended up going in the fourth round. I think he'll get some playing time. Ross Pierce-Baker, the starting center at Alabama, he ends up going to Washington. They had a great draft. I think if Gruden can get to coaching, I think that'll be really good. Tennessee, who a team, of course, that I'm fond of. I like that they got Jeffrey Simmons at 19 because if he could put things together and once he heals from this ACL injury, he is he's not on Quinnen Williams level, but he's pretty dang close. He looked dominant at Mississippi State, and I got to say, I did not appreciate the way that ESPN covered Jeffrey Simmons. I do believe that they should talk about some of these domestic situations when they pop up. I mean, Tyreek Hill is a situation right now that just looks awful. Some of the news coming out from that. You had Joe Mixon, who got into some trouble when he was a younger guy. There's plenty of stories out there about this. And certainly what Jeffrey Simmons did, he was caught on video punching a woman. He was caught on video punching a woman who was fighting his sister. And Jeffrey Simmons has answered for this. He was suspended only one game, which of course looked like not that bad of a punishment, but he's been hounded by this for the last few years of his career. And by all the things that I could find from Mississippi State people, from people who have covered Jeffrey Simmons, he seems like he is actually very sorry about what he did. There were some awful words that this woman was saying about his sister's dead children. I mean, that's what this came down to. He shouldn't have done it. But ESPN just they were on a high horse when he was picked and went on and on, didn't show one single highlight from Simmons. I didn't like the way they covered that, but I guess in this day and age, that's the way they got to do it now. I'm not sure.
It's a situation to where, again, the young man has redeemed himself. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just been the personification of what it means to be a great citizen since that mistake was made after him coming out of high school. And this is prior to him enrolling at Mississippi State, not while he was at Mississippi State. I think he was one of the best students on the campus, knowing that he was on thin ice his entire time there and he had no room for error.
Right.
So the decision that he made was a horrible one, but he made it at 18. And I know a lot of grown people who make horrible decisions, much less an 18-year-old. But no, he should have never touched a woman. That was horrible, horribly wrong. But I would have liked to see ESPN go a different way and show highlights of his dominance on the football field.
Right. Yeah, I wish they I have no problem with them mentioning it, but move on. Talk about the guy who he is now. And if you want to go on about that in one of your E60 segments or something, do that. A.J. Brown, they got him late in the second round. Tennessee, that was a good pick. I think he's going to be a good receiver. And then DeAndre Walker, the outside linebacker from Georgia, surprisingly dropping all the way into the fifth round. That's another guy I think will work out well for the Tennessee Titans. For New Orleans, another draft where they don't have a lot of picks, and I think they're just trying to find the right guys and get as much juice out of the end of Drew Brees' career as they can. They were so close last year to making it into the Super Bowl, and they just, especially after Max Unger announced his retirement going into this draft, I mean, he didn't announce it very long ago, they traded up and got their guy in the second round, Eric McCoy, who started at center at Texas A&M, and I think he'll come in and start immediately at center for the New Orleans Saints.
And you had to bolster that O-line. That's a need for the Saints, so you definitely went up and you traded up to get what your need was, especially mm-hmm. not having a first-round pick. And then you look at the DB situation, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson from Florida. You trade up to get him as well. I think that was critical also for the Saints.
Yeah, and another guy here, yeah, Chauncey Gardner, you're right, he is a possible steal for sure. Minnesota, I loved what they did in the draft. Looks like they had about 12 picks, but starting with Garrett Bradbury from North Carolina State, he came down to the Senior Bowl and had an amazing week. And then they went Irv Smith Jr., who probably a long-term replacement for Kyle Rudolph, who looks like he's entering the end of his career. I think Irv Smith has a good chance at Minnesota to put together some good years. And then they got another starting guard in the fourth round in Drew Samia. So Minnesota, I think, put together a really good draft. And what I like about them, with the 250th pick, they took the long snapper from Air Force. I've never seen a long snapper drafted, but a long snapper from a service academy drafted to the Minnesota Vikings. I thought that was pretty funny. And I did have one more team here I had mentioned that I thought had a really good draft. Denver Broncos, I thought, put together a good draft, especially getting Drew Lock in the second round, 42nd overall. I think he'll end up being a starter for them once Flacco falls apart or retires. But Noah Fant going first round to them, and then Dalton Reisner, pretty much an immediate starter at tackle. I really like what the Denver Broncos did. Just good drafts all around, and it's probably because so many SEC players were picked.
And you look at Alabama State making history.
Yeah.
Titus Howard.
That was great.
You know, the young man right here from Monroeville goes on to play his collegiate ball at Alabama State, puts on some 75-plus pounds from the time he leaves high school to the time he enrolls at Alabama State, and finishes, gets the invite to the Senior Bowl, and look at him now. I mean, he's a situation to where he's now a Houston Texan,
yeah,
and is going to fit into that situation just fine. I mean, but making history for Alabama State, congratulations to him.
And Titus from Monroeville, he should get the option to start immediately, because Houston's offensive line last year was they gave up 62 sacks.
Yeah,
that was the most in all
many.
The NFL. Titus, unless he screws up or gets injured, he should start immediately in front of DeAndre, in front of Watson and Hopkins and all those good ballers they have down there in Houston. I want to talk about the NBA playoffs a minute when we come back to wrap it up. Also, Talladega, Chase Elliott winning for the first time at the Talladega Super Speedway, something that his dad, Bill Elliott, did a couple times in his career. We'll cover both of those things when we get back to wrap up Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. Want to give us a call or text 251-343-0106.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night, wrapping it up on this Monday night. Coming up, The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle, Tom Claxton. Go ahead and get your phones ready. I know you got questions about how to fix your car, how to make them run better. Kevin and Tom have all the answers for you coming up right after Sports Night here on FM Talk 106.5. Some contracts, Corey, to talk about, some new contracts in both NCAA football and NCAA basketball. Nick Saban, no longer number one in the NCAA football contracts. Who has surpassed him?
That'll be one Dabo Sweeney. His contract extension is worth $93 million, a 10-year contract extension. It pays him an average of 9.3. Coach Saban had an 8-year, $74 million deal, but now Dabo is the highest-paid college coach. And when you win two national championships in 3 years and beat the GOAT two times in 3 years, that'll tend to get you a $93 million contract.
Yeah, well, you know what that means, though. You know what's coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Once Saban's able to walk across that stage and get another check, I think Alabama's got to re-up him. You can't have Nick Saban being the number two paid head coach in the nation.
He will get paid. I mean, there's no question Nick Saban, I think he has an agent to where he will become the highest paid collegiate coach. It's just how his contract is going to work out, though.
Another coach that just got a pretty nice raise. A lot of people thought he might be moving on after making it into the national championship game in basketball. But Texas Tech head coach Chris Beard agreed today to a new contract. 6 years, about $4.5 million annually. Now makes him the fourth highest paid head coach in the country. You got Calipari at number one, Mike Krzyzewski number two at Duke, Tennessee's Rick Barnes at number three, who, as a Vols follower, he better start putting up where that money is. He needs to make it past the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. But now Texas Tech coach Chris Beard making that money. And I would expect Virginia's coach, Tony Bennett, to not be very far behind him after the couple years that they've put together.
You win a national championship, it'll do it for you, dog.
Bruce Pearl, he signed a new extension, which when we talked with Rod Bramlett leading into, I think we talked to him before the Sweet 16.
We did.
Bramlett said he wouldn't have been surprised if Bruce Pearl got a contract extension, and he was exactly right about that. Looks like Bruce Pearl will be at Auburn for a while, and some news came out last week or over the weekend that Austin Wiley, also, he's going to return to the Auburn basketball team. That leaves a couple players right now who are still entered into the NBA draft. Jared Harper, who looks like, I mean, he didn't really exactly leave himself much leeway to come back to Auburn. He pretty much said he was done at Auburn. I'm not sure. Once he gets his grade, if he's not high enough, I could see Jared Harper coming back. But also Chuma Okeke, he's exploring the NBA draft. And with that ACL injury, I wouldn't be surprised to see him also come back if he's not getting the numbers that he expects in the NBA draft. So good news for Auburn that Austin Wiley's coming back. Looks like they're bringing back most of the same team, minus maybe Bryce Brown and Jared Harper, which are a couple guys that you don't exactly want to lose.
Yeah, you want to get your general back, and that's going to be critical. And I tell you what, Dalton, what's going to be critical in the NBA playoffs is what's going on right now. Some great games played yesterday between Golden State and Houston.
Yeah, Golden State and Houston. I think that, you know, I told you last week, I think Houston is going to win the series, and I still stand behind that even after losing that first game yesterday. And so much drama in that game. I mean, first off, Kevin Durant right now looks like maybe the best player in the playoffs.
He does.
After the last three games that he's put together, I think he put up 45 and then 50 in the last two games of the first round, and then scored 35 yesterday. You had Steph Curry fouling out, Andre Iguodala fouled out, Chris Paul ejected at the very end of the game, might have even touched an official. I'm not sure if the ruling has come out on that. But
it has. He's good.
He's good. Okay, so he's not suspended an extra game, but everybody on Houston just absolutely losing it. James Harden complaining that he wants a fair chance to win, says they're not calling the right fouls. Then you got Green laughing at him basically after the game. I love it. This is all the NBA drama wrapped into one series, and I still think that whoever wins this series is going to be the NBA champion.
Win or go home time, and the Western Conference is the strongest conference. Game number one coming up between Portland and Denver tonight. Mm-hmm. And in the Eastern Conference, you have game number two going on right now between Philadelphia and Toronto. Philadelphia leading Toronto in game number two, 45-28.
Yeah, Philadelphia certainly bouncing back after that whooping that Kawhi Leonard put on them on Saturday. Let's talk about a team that you've been following closely, and hopefully we'll get somebody connected to this team on over the next few weeks. I don't want to put any pressure on the universe out there to bring us this one person, but Damian Lillard just looked, and I'm not talking about getting Damian Lillard, although that would be nice to have him on Sports Night. What about that shot to go ahead and clinch over OKC, which OKC falling apart again, that has a bunch of questions on its own, whether it's time to maybe move on from Russell Westbrook. I don't know. He doesn't seem like he's going to be able to get it done as the leader of a team. But Damian Lillard just in their face, 37 feet out, putting the series on his back and clinching it, then looking dead into the camera, meme-worthy for years, and 50 points in that Game 5 victory. He's amazing.
Dame time. I mean, he's just playing great basketball, so composed, holds himself in a great manner on the floor and off the floor, and look forward to hopefully seeing and talking with one of his assistant coaches coming up.
Hey, you know, as a LeBron fan, I'm sad. I'm sad that LeBron isn't, you know, in the final eight teams. I mean, we've seen him in the final two teams for the last 8 years in a row or whatever, and there's no LeBron, which makes it kind of weird, but these might be the best NBA playoffs there's been in, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years. Some great, great teams. And Boston finally pulling it together. They haven't lost yet in the playoffs. Went ahead and swept Indiana 4-0, and then came out and blew out Milwaukee, who was the top team in the regular season
in this Milwaukee.
Year. In Milwaukee. Looks like Kyrie Irving, amazing. Finally, our guy that came from Utah, Gordon Hayward, he's finally seemed to be putting it together after some bad injuries. Boston looking really good. And how about this? With the Red Sox winning the World Series, and then you had the Patriots winning the Super Bowl, the Bruins still alive in the NHL playoffs, and Celtics looking better than ever. Could there be four Boston teams that walk off with trophies following this year?
Title town, bean town. We'll find out here in the next couple of weeks for sure.
Way too much to cover in 1 hour. I could talk about the NBA playoffs for another hour and a half. Great to have Chase Goodbread on from NFL.com covering the draft. Looking forward to another strong NFL season. Tua, is he the number one quarterback going into 2020? Right now he is. We'll cover his career the rest of the way, all the way into the NFL and beyond, and all kinds of other NFL players. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.